Blog Talk Radio.
Infinity, a technology company that specializes in collecting high-resolution seabed data, announced on Tuesday that it's given up its search for the wreckage of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. Ocean Infinity searched and collected data from more than 43,000 square miles of ocean floor in about 3 months of work. This was more than the original target and almost equal to the previously searched area. I would firstly like to extend the thoughts of everyone at Ocean Infinity to the families of those who have lost loved ones on MH370, said Oliver Plunkett, Ocean Infinity CEO. Part of our motivation for renewing the search was to try to provide some answers to those affected. It is therefore with a heavy heart that we end our current search without having achieved that aim. The search, however, is likely to continue in one form or another. See more in Newsletter Online 2018.
Breaking news number two. Republic Airways opens Flight Academy to combat pilot shortage. This is by Kate O'Connor. Republic Airways announced today that it is launching a pilot training academy to help address the shortage of qualified commercial pilots in the U.S. The Leadership in Flight Training Academy, also called LIFT, which will be located at the Indianapolis International Airport, IND, in Indianapolis, Indiana, is designed to be a direct-to-hire path for students. Graduates of the program are, according to Republic, guaranteed a first officer position with the airline. When our industry began facing a significant pilot shortage, a shortage that is expected to worsen in the coming years, we knew we had to do something, said Republic Airways Holdings CEO Byron Bedford. See more in newsletter January to June 2018. Don.
Breaking news number three. Boeing's best-selling 737 jet hits historic milestone. 10,000 planes produced, by Dominic Gates. Boeing celebrated production of its 10,000th single-aisle 737 on Tuesday, putting what is already the best-selling jet of all time on track become the best-selling large transport plane in history. With delivery of the 10,000 737, Boeing broke the Guinness World Record title for the most produced commercial jet aircraft model. Boeing employees at the company's facility in Renton celebrated the 10,000 737 to come off the production line. Yet when the plane was first flown over 50 years ago, no one would have guessed its destiny. The pilot in command of the first flight, who is now 93 years old, recalled hopping around the globe and 737s in the years after the plane's 1967 debut, the Goose Flailing Sails. You can see more of this in the newsletter, January to June, 2018.
Breaking news number four. Delta to resume U.S.-India flights in 2019 by Chai Ovation, May 25th, 2018. Delta Airlines, DL, Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson, has announced it will resume nonstop flights between the United States and India next year. The U.S. carriers last such service to India to Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson, and Mumbai International Airport operated in 2009. In a statement, Delta said the move follows the recent agreement between the U.S. and the government of the United Arab Emirates and Qatar to address the issue of alleged government subsidies provided to Qatar Airways, Etihad Airways, and Emirates. Take over, Chuck.
Breaking news number five. Southwest Airlines apologizes to woman who claims employee made her prove a biracial son was hers. This was by the independent U.S. Associated Press. I felt that this situation, it was my responsibility to say, hey, this isn't okay. Lindsay Goblet was traveling with her fiancé, Patrick Martin, the boy's father, who was black. Southwest Airlines has apologized to the woman who claimed a member of the staff stopped her from boarding because they did not believe her one-year-old biracial son was hers. Lindsay claimed in a series of tweets that before a flight from Denver to Oakland, a desk agent asked her to prove that her son was hers, despite having a passport. She said, because we have different last names, the woman basketball coach from the University of California, Berkeley, wrote, my guess is because he has a different skin color. See more on newsletter Jan-June 2018.
Hello, Eastern family. It's great having you with us. My name is Jim Hart, coming to you live from the beautiful island of Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. Along with our other hosts at different locations, we want to welcome you and thank you for listening and calling into the show. You have truly made us the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We'd love to hear your comments and share your memories with radio listeners from around the world during our broadcast. If you haven't called the show before, all you have to do is call 213-816-1611 and just say hi or hola, buenos dias, como esta, bonjour, to talk with us on the air live. We'll see if we can find an interpreter if we need it, or I'll just try to do it myself. We can identify many countries around the world who listen in with our Blog Talk Radio application. Isn't it great that we can keep the Eastern legacy going out not only to the Eastern family, but to listeners from many different countries around the world? That's what we try to do every week on the EAL radio show. Won't you join us by adding your voice to these broadcasts? Our thanks also to those who choose to listen by computer using the radio icon on our homepage at www.ealradioshow.com, or perhaps by signing in at the site of our provider, Blog Talk Radio, at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. Should you wish to talk during our live broadcast, feel free to use our call-in number, 213-816-1611, at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Let me repeat that number so you can write it down for your Monday night visit. And you can tell your friends about us also That number is 213-816-1611. And don't forget, you can listen to any of our 367 Monday night broadcasts and the 60 Thursday broadcast by simply going to blogtalkradio.com/CappedEddie and scrolling down to the archive of broadcasts. Each episode is briefly described. Our lines are always open for calls, and if you choose not to participate and talk live with our hosts, we ask you to please mute your phones, as our producer does not have the capability of filtering out background noises. Now, Mr. Producer, let's get Flight Episode 368 in the air.
Eastern 368. The winds are from the east at 5 to 10 miles per hour. You're clear for takeoff. Runway 9 left.
Roger, Eastern 368 is on the roll.
America's favorite way to fly, we thank you. If you haven't flown Eastern recently, give us a try. We'll show you we really do earn our wings every day.
St. John in the NBC newsroom in New York. Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour. All night long, bulletins have been pouring in from Berlin claiming that D-Day is here, claiming that the invasion of Western Europe has begun. Let me read you several of the latest bulletins. One says that a report, unconfirmed by Allied sources, of course, says that heavy fighting is taking place between the Germans and invasion forces on the Normandy Peninsula, about 31 miles southwest of Le Havre. Another bulletin, also from Berlin Radio and unconfirmed, says the British-American landing operations against the western coast of Europe, from the sea and from the air, are stretching over the entire area between Cherbourg and Le Havre, a distance of about 60 miles. I repeat, there is no confirmation. And here's another bulletin just in. DNB, the German agency, says, this is unconfirmed, that the most important airdromes in the area of the Normandy Peninsula of France have been wiped out. Now, I presume that means wiped out by the Allies. As you may have heard on earlier broadcasts, all three German news agencies have begun broadcasting these stories that the invasion is here. But there is no Allied confirmation as yet. The first report came out shortly after midnight, and since then we've been flooded with reports from Berlin. Paris Radio, strangely enough, has not confirmed any of these reports. And now we have just been informed that we can expect, in a very few seconds, a very important broadcast from the British capital. And so now we take you to London.
The text of communique number one will be released to the press and radio of the United Nations in 10 seconds. Repeat, 10 seconds from now. command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France. The communique will be repeated. Under the command of General Eisenhower, Allied naval forces, supported by strong air forces, began landing Allied armies this morning on the northern coast of France. This ends the reading of communique number one from Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is New York, NBC Newsroom again. Men and women of the United States, this is a momentous hour in world history. This is the invasion of Hitler's Europe, the zero hour of the Second Front. The men of General Dwight Eisenhower are leaving their landing barges, fighting their way up the beaches into the fortress of Nazi Europe. They are moving in from the sea to attack the enemy under a mammoth cloud of fighter planes, under a ceiling of screaming shells from Allied warships. The first news flashes do not say, but a large proportion of this assault is believed to be in the hands of American men. They are making the attack side by side with the British Tommies who were bombed and blasted out of Europe at Dunkirk. Now, at this hour, they are bombing and blasting their way back again. This is the European front, once again being established in fire and blood, not only by the Americans and British, but by many allies in the fight against Axis aggression.
Jim Hart, would you start our show tonight, please?
Dear listeners, in today's world, we seem to forget history and the importance of sacrifice made by so many men and women throughout each war. It took more than a year to plan the invasion known to us as D-Day or the Normandy invasion, and beforehand, more than 3,200 reconnaissance missions were launched to take photos and map out the areas. Some of the early invasion plans actually blew out of a window in a house in London, but were returned by a man whose sight was too impaired to read or know what they were. This coming Wednesday marks the 74th anniversary of the Normandy landings, which have come to become known as D-Day. The term D-Day refers to the specific day on which a military combative attack operation is set to be initiated. However, since June 6, 1944, D-Day has been tied to the now infamous Normandy landing that initiated the Western Allies' effort to liberate mainland Europe from Hitler's raid and the Nazi occupation during World War II. D-Day was the largest seaborne invasion in military history, and the landings were preceded by extensive bombardment, most notably an airborne assault. Norma Jean.
Jim Hart, the invasion that day was spread among five beaches, with the English attacking Gold and Sword beaches. The Canadians were at Juneau, and the American soldiers taking on Utah and Omaha. The landing zone was a 50-mile stretch of beach. In advance of the attack, High Command ordered 30,000 stretchers and 60,000 blankets to help care for the expected wounded. The invasion led to such gadgets as a swimming tank and a flame-throwing tank called the Crocodile.
Before we tell the story of this biggest battle in World War II, let's listen to what our leaders had to say about this world war-changing invasion. Jim Holder?
Sure, Norma Jean, I'm here. I don't have to tell you how fragile this precious gift of freedom is. Every time we hear, watch, or read the news, we are reminded that liberty is a rare commodity in this world, spoken by President Ronald Reagan.
And what a plan. This vast operation, undoubtedly the most complicated and difficult that has ever occurred, by Winston Churchill.
We want to get the hell out of there. We want to get the hell over there. The quicker we clean up this goddamn mess, the quicker we can take a little jaunt against the purple pissing Japs and clean out their nest too, before the goddamn Marines get all of the credit. General George S. Patton, Jr.
It was unknowable then, but so much of the progress that would define the 20th century on both sides of the Atlantic came down to the battle for a slice of beach, only 6 miles long and 2 miles wide, according to President Barack Obama. Don.
Lieutenant Welch remembered walking around his sleeping men and thinking to himself that they had looked at and smelled death all around them all day, but never even dreamed of applying it to themselves. They had not come here to fear. They had not come here to die. They had come here to win. Stephen E. Ambrose, Band of Brothers, E Company, 506 Regiment, 101st Airborne.
Men, I'm not a religious man, and I don't know your feelings in this matter, but I'm going to ask you to pray with me for the success of this mission before us. And while we pray, let us get on our knees and not look down, but look up, faces raised to the sky, so that we can see God and ask his blessing in what we are about to do. Lieutenant Colonel Robert L. Wolverton.
We know that progress is not inevitable, but neither was victory upon these beaches. Now, as then, the inner voice tells us to stand up and move forward. Now, as then, free people must choose. President Bill Clinton, speaking at the 50th anniversary of D-Day.
This operation is not being planned with any alternatives. This operation is planned as a victory, and that's the way it's going to be. We're going down there, we're throwing everything we have into it, and we're going to make it a success. General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
That road to VE Day was hard and long and traveled by weary and valiant men. And history will always record where the road began. It began here with the first footprints on the beaches of Normandy, President George W. Bush.
When pressure mounts and strain increases, everyone begins to show the weakness in his makeup. But it's up to the commander to conceal his, above all, to conceal doubt, fear, and distrust. General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
These are the boys of Point Du Hoc. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. These are the heroes who helped end the war. President Ronald Reagan.
After enduring all the ordeals and training in England, we felt like we were completely ready for anything. And we were very ready to fight the Germans, and we looked forward to the day when we could actually get into the real fight. Sergeant Bob Slaughter, 116th Infantry Regiment, the U.S. 29th Division.
The waiting for history to be made was the most difficult. I spent much time in prayer. Being cooped up made it worse. Like everyone else, I was seasick, and the stench of vomit permeated our craft. Private Claire Golonik, 359th Infantry Regiment, United States 90th Division.
I have full confidence in your courage and devotion to duty and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck. And let us beseech the blessings of Almighty God upon the great and noble undertaking. General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
God Almighty, in a few short hours we will be in battle with the enemy. We do not join battle afraid. We do not ask favors or indulgence, but ask that, if you will, use us as your instrument for the right and an aid in returning peace to the world. Lieutenant Colonel Robert L. Wolverton, Commanding Officer of 3rd Battalion, 506 PIR.
Rangers, lead the way. Colonel Francis W. Dawson.
There is one great thing that you men will all be able to say after this war is over and you are home once again. You may be thankful that 20 years from now, when you're sitting by the fireplace with your grandson on your knee and he asks, what did you do in the great World War II? You won't have to cough, shift him from one knee to the other and say, well, your granddaddy shoveled shit in Louisiana, General George S. Patton, Jr.
They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate, President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you, General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
No thoughts had I of anything, or at least that's what I thought. I even thought I couldn't think, but now I think I never thought. Christopher Miller.
There's a graveyard in northern France where all the dead boys from D-Day are buried. The white crosses reach from one horizon to the other. I remember looking it over and thinking it was a forest of graves. But the rows were like this, dizzying, diagonal, perfectly straight. So after all, it wasn't a forest, but an orchard of graves. Nothing to do with nature, unless you count human nature, by Barbara Kingsolver.
Only two kinds of people are going to be on this beach, the dead and those who are going to die. Now get moving. These words were shouted by Colonel George Taylor, commander of the division's lead assault regiment on D-Day, who risked death to walk along the beach and thus motivated his soldiers who were seeking shelter up against the sand dunes to continue the fight. The Allied infantry began landing on the coast of France at 6:30 a.m., and by midnight, over 150,000 British, U.S., and Canadian troops had landed in Normandy. Despite the impressive landing and large Allied force, D-Day was a massacre, with about 99,000 Allied soldiers either dead or wounded. The death toll was staggering in comparison to German forces, only losing about 4,000 soldiers. Despite the growing death toll and dangerous mission, the Allied forces gained momentum and soon began to expand their occupation over the coming months. Due to D-Day, Allied troops began the liberation of Europe. General Dwight D. Eisenhower, who commanded the operation, soon sent out a broadcast to the citizens of occupied Europe, stating, "Although the initial assault may not be in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching." In addition to Eisenhower's word of comfort and promise to the people of occupied Europe, the events of D-Day inspired generals, soldiers, and U.S. presence and other world leaders for years to come.
Jim, to keep things secret, one commander tested his troops, Terrence Ottaway. Chose 30 females from the Women's Auxiliary Air Force to visit local pubs in England to see if they could successfully pry information from any troops about the secret plan. Apparently, none of the men took the bait. The naval plan, Operation Neptune, included 6,939 vessels, including 4,216 landing craft, the largest ever single-day amphibious attack. The flat-bottom landing craft originally intended to be used to rescue Mississippi River flood victims. In the air, more than 24,000 airborne troops were dropped behind enemy lines to take roads and bridges as needed. More than 2,000 aircraft gliders were used. There were even dummy paratroopers dropped into the tray to convince the Germans that the real landings were taking place elsewhere. 7 million pounds of bombs were dropped that day as 1,800 Allied bombers attacked the German lines. On the beaches that day were 73,000 American troops, 61,715 British troops, and 21,400 Canadian troops, with 50,000 Germans opposing them. Two vital mistakes were made by the German leadership. First, Field Marshal Rommel, who oversaw the defending North France, was at home celebrating with his wife's 50th anniversary birthday. He had been told the seas were too rough for a landing. Hitler was asleep when the news of the invasion arrived. Planned time was lost with everybody around the leader was afraid to wake him up. Jim?
Yeah, Chuck, just as a reminder, behind every fact and number is a man, and sometimes a woman, who gave their all to defeat evil and keep the world free. Their ultimate sacrifices should never be just wrapped up in tidy numbers of five facts tidbits. No, they deserve much more than that. We owe them a great debt of gratitude for what they did. Those that jumped out of the landing boats first and never made it to dry land. And those who forged a path laden with their own blood so that their brothers in arms could make it a few more feet up the beach. They should always be remembered. They should be thanked. They should be honored.
Another interesting story that is verified daily by those who visit is in a 1,000-year-old church in Angonville-au-Plaine, a tiny village in Normandy, just a few miles inland from D-Day's Utah Beach, there is a stark reminder of the cost of war. In that church, on June 6, 1944, paratrooper medics Robert Wright, then 20, and Kenneth Moore set up a field hospital. They treated both American and German wounded as a battle raged around them. They used the pews as makeshift beds and for their patients. 74 years later, the blood of the young men fighting still stained the pews. We observe Memorial Day to remember their sacrifice, and in just 2 days, we will observe the 74th anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Europe that stemmed the Nazi tide and led to victory in Europe. When you think of D-Day, think of the men and women behind the statistics that kept us all living in the land of the free and the home of the brave.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I'll stand and place my hand upon my heart every time her anthem plays. And when I see somebody on TV take their stand on bended knee, whether it's on AstroTurf or grass, I think of those whose freedom was not free
And I say, take a knee, my ass. I'll stand up for the flag, take off my hat for old glory. Thank God I live in the home of the brave and the land of the free. I'll honor the ones who gave it all, so we're all free to go play ball. If only for their sake, I won't. Valley Forge to Vietnam, 9/11 to Afghanistan, that star-spangled banner does yet wave. I won't forget, I owe a debt of gratitude I never can repay. Arm in arm, side by side, American heroes fought and died, showing some respect too much to ask. I speak for those whose freedom was not free. I say, take a knee, my ass. I'll stand up for the flag, take off my hat.
Great show tonight, gang. It's very heartwarming and emotional when you put a show together and you research on the internet, of course, where most of the material we find today reside. But just trying to select the sound bites, clips, and the text that we use to deliver each important holiday, like, I don't know if it's a holiday, but a Remembrance Day that we have coming up Wednesday, and all the people that perished. I think most all of you guys have seen Private Ryan. What is it? Saving Private Ryan, I think it was.
Yes.
And
yes.
Some of the sound clips were of that combat that I used in the clip, and I'm sure it was very, very accurate in recording. But I've got a email that was sent to me by one of our members, and I want to read it now. And it goes, I received this email from one of our members who wished to share their visit to Normandy. Purple pissing Japs. Never heard that one before. I wonder how that got started. Of course, that was said by George Patton. Did the Japanese drink purple Kool-Aid? Or maybe they grew purple barley or purple hops for their beer? I did happen to finally see and walk Normandy beaches in May 2014. It was the last stop on a repositioning cruise in April and May, but it was cordoned off with yellow police tape because it was the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and the world leaders were scheduled to be there in another month. We were allowed on the beaches, which we did go. They also allowed us into the museum. We all had long, sobering looks about us while remembering what our U.S. troops went through. The weather the day we were there was pretty much identical to the 45-mile-per-hour wind and gray skies with a few raindrops. We were there May 10th, And as a result, I missed my birthday party of great-granddaughter who was 1 year old. Also, I had never heard of all those beaches like Juneau, Sword, Gold. All I ever heard was Omaha and Utah. My high school classmates phoned, and she was living in Redondo Beach, California, and needed a roommate on that cruise. She was able to lure me with Normandy, as I had already been to all the other stops, and Normandy was on my bucket list. Great email. Thanks so much. Thoughts like that. It's a place that I would like to visit. Don't know if I'll ever make it the remaining time I have, but yeah, it's in a bucket list. I'm sure it's on a lot of folks' bucket list. Those folks that sacrificed their life and were severely wounded during that D-Day invasion, but success, it was successful. How about it? Any other thoughts about our program tonight and the coming D-Day?
Yes, Neil, this is Jim.
Jim, go ahead.
In 1990, I was elected vice president of the Florida chapter of the 8th Air Force Historical Society. At that time, we had 550 members. General Albin Urzik, who lives in West Palm Beach, is now 101. He's one of our members. And the president of our group, Mr. Bill Uphoff, lives also in Jupiter, and he is 100 years old today, almost blind, but he is going strong.
Wow.
I can't tell you how dedicated these men were so long after World War II, but the thing that I always remember is every year during one of our reunions, unfortunately, our membership became less and less, and as of today, there are only 86 members left. Very few of them can attend any of our meetings because they won't drive any distance. But we try to stay together, and I talked with Bill Uphoff today, and he's planning a board of directors meeting sometime in the coming months. You just can't keep these guys down, and that's a wonderful thing. Bill served with distinction. He had 35 bombing missions. He was a captain of a B-17 bomber, and I just take my hat off to him every day. That's my story.
Excellent. Thank you, Jim. It's people like him that we were able to go on.
Well, Dorothy?
Go ahead.
I'd like to expand a little bit on that quote that I had about what Colonel George Taylor said on D-Day. That quote ended up being the title of a book, The Dead and Those About to Die. It's an extremely well-written book, and it concerned about John McManus, who is well-known in the literary world. And it's not a short book. It's a fairly thick book, well-researched, and it deals 100% with that one day, D-Day. It's only about D-Day. Can you imagine a quite thick book that is only about one day? I recommend it highly. I read it. My son bought it and gave it to me, and I read it about 4 months ago. I couldn't put it down. When you get through reading that book, you'll have a whole new idea. Well, possibly not new, but you'll have a real handle on what happened.
What's the name of that book, Jim?
The Dead and Those About to Die. Is by
Thank
he
you.
Took George Taylor's quote and made it the title of the book, and by John McManus. And one interesting thing about it is that Colonel Taylor, prior to the invasion, knowing that he was leading the regiment that was the first to hit the beaches, that if the guys were going to be up against those sand dunes, and what could he do to make them continue to fight? and he thought that that would be a good thing to say. It wasn't something he did instantly. He had thought about it the night before, and it really worked. The guys got up, and he motivated them, and they continued to go forward facing tremendous machine gun fire and mortars.
Just an incredible thing. You listen to it, and your heart goes out, and you just can't believe what they went through. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
We have,
and it's a new book.
Other...
It's only been out a year or so.
Okay. We have other callers. If you'd like to make a comment, please do so. I see a couple of area codes, 505 and 305 and 770. So comments we'll take right now before we finish up with some announcements.
I think Vito Varelli is on 305.
Vito, are you with us? 305? Don't think so.
No, that's Miami.
Eric code 305.
770 is Atlanta.
We got one caller, I think it's from Albuquerque, out way out west, 505.
Oh.
Okay.
Mary Block?
No. I don't know whether Mary's that far out west. She might be, but I haven't heard from Mary in a while. But Dorothy?
She's trying to sell her trailer. Yes, sir.
Yeah,
Neil.
How about telling us about what's coming up here?
Well, we have quite a number of shows coming up that are really going to be another good session. June 11th, we have Eastern Airlines Reservations. And on the 18th of June, we have Eastern Maintenance. So, Chuck, you're one of our mechanics. We want to hear from you. June 25th, we have Hazards of Microburst, and that's the 23rd anniversary of Eastern Flight 66 on June 24, 1975. So we hope to hear from some of those crews that might want to share with us what they've gone through, some of these survivors. Contact Neil, and we'll be happy to have you aboard. From the Eastern Files, we're going to have another part two of Captain Gene Brown on June 7th. And on Old Time Radio, we have June 14th, the new series that Neil has presented for us, Listening to the Adventures of Sky King, part two. So we want to also thank our sponsors who always seem to guide us and help us along, and we appreciate that immensely. We have our Easton Brett show that we're going to have another one, Brett 3. So we would like anyone that has Easton Bretts out there, if you're one or you know of someone that is, to please contact us. Send an email to host@EALradioshow.com, or you can go to our Facebook page and type in Eastern Airlines Radio and see what we have. There also is an Eastern Brat Facebook page, so you have a lot of venues to let us know so you can be with us and join in on some of the memories that you had with us. Also, I'd like you to check out our website. We have a lot of interesting things up there. I don't see some of you folks have been up there in a little bit, and maybe you might want to go in and take a little time to go up and see all the new things that we have on there. We have a lot of Eastern history, a lot of Facebook comments on the new Eastern Airlines LLC that's been inaugurated again, and let's see where that's going to go. And so there's a lot of different news up there, and would like you to go in and see. We have a calendar that's been posted with upcoming events. So join us on our website. Become a member. It doesn't cost you anything. And we'd like anyone to refer Eastern members or Eastern family or any airline enthusiast to join us on our membership. We're trying to make 1,000. We still have 988. We're looking forward to your help in getting there. Thanks again, and back to you, Neil.
Don't forget, we have a retired Eastern Pilots Association convention coming up. Jim Holder, tell us about it.
Well, it's September the 4th, Francis Marion Hotel, Charleston, South Carolina. We have three cocktail parties each night. The registration fee has been cut to $200 per person or $400 for a couple. And the first 25 who send in their registration form are going to be in a box that the name would be drawn for a free night. And I think Neil Holland's already said that he's going to be one of those 25 hoping to get a free night. And he just
and
very
Dorothy's
well might.
Dorothy's going to be there with them.
And Dorothy, she can put her name in the box, too, you know, the first 25. Unfortunately, being on the board of directors, I don't get to do that. And we are going to have Jim Gossett as our banquet speaker. He's apparently, not apparently, I've heard him on the radio many times. He's hilarious. He's a good imitator of voices, and he's a comedian beyond reproach, and he will be our banquet speaker the final night, which would be the 6th, I believe. And we're looking forward to having
right.
you. Everybody, come on, have a good time.
Yeah. And everyone, don't forget, at the REPA convention, Neil is going to be inducted into the REPA EAL Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So we'd
yes.
like to see as many of our members join us there, so it would be great. And we're looking forward to it, and I know Neil is looking forward to it. So join us and have some fun. I love the ladies' luncheon that you plan this year, Jim. It looks really very nice. The basket weaving, very nice. Don and I were in South Carolina, and we loved watching them, so we're looking forward to doing that again, or I am anyway.
Yeah, we had a nice article about that in the magazine, that lady that does baskets, so whatever it is, I don't know. That's the lady's lunch and stuff. I'm more in charge of cocktail party.
Right, and you're also going to have the French chef there. The hotel chef is going to be there, isn't he, Jim? At the luncheon? I think I read that.
I hope so if you're saying it. I don't know. I don't know anything about a French chef. I'm in charge of the cocktail parties, okay?
And selling
the
raffle tickets.
I apologize for getting the UR being inducted into the Easter REPA Hall of Fame. I'm sorry.
Know. Oh,
by the
you
way,
know what,
Jim, that repartee was wonderful that came out.
It was.
Great, great repartee. The photos from the convention of last year were clear and crisp. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. Well,
I'm
I have a good photographer, Lee Johnson, and I've got a good graphic designer, Kelly Brazell. And they make me look good, so I'm happy about it.
I'm just hoping that you'll find just a little room for us to do a radio show at the convention, and Dorothy will both be holding microphones, and my technical advisor Emery Martinelli will
be
there.
Be with
and,
us?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So we're looking forward to it. It's going
to
be a good time.
So every night,
you know,
if you want to, it's fine with me.
Okay. Well, I think I talked to somebody who's the president this
and
year.
And during the daytime too.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're gonna have a good time. And I remember Charleston last time. I took that tour over to the Yorktown. I really enjoyed that aircraft carrier over there.
That's what Don wants to do this year.
Yeah,
we didn't get to do that last time.
Yeah, great. Great. Okay, very good. Thanks so much.
Neil, it was a wonderful show, very emotional. And as you read it and go along, you're listening to it, you just can't believe what happened, and you're talking about it. It's unbelievable.
Well, I urge everyone that interested in to buy that book I discussed, The Dead and Those About to Die. You won't get the page turned, you won't be able to put it down.
I bet. Thanks, Jim.
Okay. We've got another caller from, I think, Long Island, New York. Area code 631. We got a bunch of calls here, and if you'd like to make a comment before we sign off and get the airplane on the ground.
No, this was just Mike Scott here. You guys talked to me. My dad was Dale Scott. He flew for Eastern for many years, and I've talked to you guys before. I just been talking with George Jen many times, and it's the first time I kind of listened in on the show, see what was going on, and I happened to look at the clock, and I said, "Well, they got about 10 minutes left. Let me see what's going on." So that's what I'm doing. I'm doing a little eavesdropping. That's what I'm doing.
Jim, we saved that 10 minutes for you.
Mike Scott, I think I get emails from you, don't I?
Oh yeah, I've talked to Jim. I talked to all you guys before. I'm an affiliate member, and I flew corporate 727s for. For eons.
Very good. Are you still flying, Mike?
No, I retired about 2 years ago at 75.
Oh,
okay.
Wow. That was good.
75.
No, I'm just flying my little small airplane around. I got a 1933 Waco like my dad used to have.
My goodness.
Wow, man. Yeah, you got
so
the
you're
best.
You're still flying
best.
That one.
Yeah, is George on tonight? George Jen?
No, George is not with us. He emailed me and said he wasn't able to make it. So
he had to go to some meeting that he was in charge of.
But we're happy to have you with us, and please tune us in.
Please come to the convention, Mike.
What's
that? We'd love to have you there. Please come to the convention in Charleston. We'd love to have you. The Reaper Convention.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Four.
I would like to do that. I haven't been to one since 1982. Took my mom down there when she was still alive, and that was when I met Dick Merrill.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well.
Wow.
Yeah.
September 4th to September 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I
guess all that
info
is in the magazine, right?
Reaper
magazine.
Did you get yours yet?
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't know if I got the most recent one.
Well, it was just mailed about a week ago, and you can go to the Reaper website. Yeah, the Reaper website convention page, and you can download on the hot button the registration form and its instructions. You don't have to cut that out of your magazine when it comes.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see how it all works out. I'd love to be able to do it.
It would be great.
Kind of miss all of that stuff. You know, I'd see a lot of old people and whatnot. I still, of course, I started with Eastern as a mechanic, so I get going with some of the old mechanics from Kennedy and all that stuff. We have meetings from here from time to time up here on Long Island. So I stay in touch with them, so they all like to hear some of my stories for one of the guys that made it from a wrench to the cockpit.
Well, you know, two shows from now, we're having a show on maintenance. So if you'd like to come in and chat with us about maintenance, especially Eastern maintenance, we'd like to have you on the show, Jim.
We can do that. I bust a lot of knuckles on those airplanes. I spent 12 years in Kennedy there swinging the wrenches and shooting rivets.
I don't know whether you know Chuck Albright.
Is...
Chuck was also maintenance, and he's one of our regular hosts, and he's busted a few knuckles himself, right, Chuck?
Yeah.
You better believe it. I've lost all my fingernails, too.
Oh.
Well, that's, to me...
It's going to be June 18, Michael.
Yeah. Well, my biggest form of entertainment for all the guys I flew with over the years, especially when we were doing Atlantic or Pacific crossings, all the guys that I flew with, except the engineers, none of them were mechanics, so when it gets quiet up there and you're not listening to anything but cell call and you're drooling on your tie, I used to keep everybody entertained with maintenance stories from Kennedy, LaGuardia, and Newark.
We want to hear those on the radio show.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. Yeah, I had great connections.
Two weeks
in a
day, is that right, Nate?
Yeah, 2 weeks. Next week is reservations. And then we'll follow that up with the maintenance show. Yeah. It'll be fun.
Hopefully I'll be able to listen in or get listen in and contribute to it maybe, you know.
Well, I got you.
Oh, wonderful.
Area code here, so we'll look for it to appear on our board.
Well, we'll see
what
happens.
All right, let's
bring
this
You only got a couple of minutes left here before you got to sign off, right?
Yeah. We're gonna land the airplane now, so I'm gonna be the Atlanta Tower.
Okay, you got three green.
Yeah. Eastern Flight 368, you're clear to land on runway 27 right. The winds are calm. If you can make the first turn off, I certainly would appreciate it. You've got a Delta 727 right behind you.
All right, Atlanta. Be advised, my first officer is making the landing again tonight. We all remember what he did last Monday night. So you know what that means. Better get the crash crew on alert, ready to roll. Now, Eastern 368's clear to land. We're coming in one way or the other.
Roger.
Well, I used
clear
to
land.
You want to make the first turn off. I always
sitting down here and holding on. So try to make the first turn off. All right, here we go.
The guys that make the first turn off are the guys that never had a change of brake.
Captain Steve, as usual, grease that one in. Be sure to tune in again next Monday at 7 p.m. when Eastern Flight 369 will be taxiing from the gate with another great adventure about Eastern reservations from the old days to System 1. That's our show for tonight, folks, and we thank all participating in tonight's broadcast, especially our listeners. And this, we take a line from the story from Lake Wobegon, where all the Eastern women are unequal, all the Eastern men are good-looking, all the Eastern children and Eastern grandchildren are way above average and not brats at all. Until then, we say, good night, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good show, Neil. Good show.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mom.
Good night, Eastern family.
Good night.
Arthur's Vineyard will break some lobsters next time.
you're going to eat all that lobster. You promise.